Okay, I'm going to call the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee to order. Good morning, everyone. Today, we have the Department of Human Services here to present the Governor's Supplemental Budget. So I think we have around five different presenters, but first I'm going to have Ms. Hansen take the role. Ms. Hansen?
Good morning. Chair Schultz?
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner? I don't see her yet. Lead Albright?
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Bolden?
Present.
Representative Burkle? I see you, sir. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, present.
Thank you. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Representative Hansen?
Hansen, present.
Thank you. Representative Keel's excused today. Representative Liebling?
Present.
Thank you. Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Noor?
Present.
Representative Novotny?
Present.
Representative Pearson, I don't think we have yet. Representative Pinto?
Present.
Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, present.
Thank you. Representative Robbins?
Present.
Good morning. Representative Sandel?
Present.
And Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, members. And we'll note people who come in. Ms. Hansen will note that. So we do have a quorum. Representative Albright, would you like to move the minutes from February 8th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Albright. So the motion has been made to approve the minutes from February 8th. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. So today, members, like I said, we're going to hear the governor's supplemental budget that relates to this committee. I will try to stop after each presenter to take one or two questions, and then hopefully we'll have time at the end if there are more questions. And then we're going to meet, next meeting is going to be Tuesday, February 15th, and we're going to go over all of the waivers that we passed last year and didn't update from DHS, especially those around home and community-based services. So let's just jump into the governor's supplemental budget. So we have Commissioner Harpstead. Welcome back to the committee. It's good to see you. Please give your name and you can begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Jody Harpstead, the Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. Chair Schultz and members of the committee. Grounded in their vision for One Minnesota, Governor Wiles and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's proposed budget to move Minnesota forward is a balance of key investments in four main categories: local jobs and projects, expanding economic opportunity, supporting kids and families, and protecting public safety. You can see on the next slide how this breaks out. $484.6 million in the first biennium that flow through the DHS budget, and $1.742 billion in the second biennium, and you can see the breakout here by the various funds that flow through DHS. The governor's supplemental budget includes proposals that address the challenges we face today while investing in the future to ensure we emerge from this time of crisis stronger than ever before. The DHS budget is a mix of new investments in priority areas as well as funding to make sure basic services such as our direct care and treatment programs have the support they need. And these are the areas we will address in our presentation today. Next slide. Moving into these proposals, first of all, we have a proposal in here for the caring professions workforce. The governor recommends revitalizing the state's behavioral health direct support and housing workforces by establishing a workforce incentive fund. This fund could be used to offer additional compensation, including but not limited to retention payments, hiring bonuses, and financial assistance for post-secondary education loans and scholarships. Employers in these industries would be allowed to apply for grants to deliver these incentives to employees who've been employed for 6 months or longer. Moving into compliance and IT. The first is our continuous improvement and compliance expansion proposal. This is a proposal to enhance DHS's ongoing effort to improve agency compliance and process controls. When payment issues arose in 2019, we took immediate steps, as you know, to address those issues, and we also took steps to prevent such issues from occurring in the future, to further develop and enhance our compliance tools. We fully implemented a compliance structure and reporting across the agency, focusing on closing audit findings and mitigating known risks. And we asked our Office of Continuous Improvement to implement Operation Swiss Watch to directly address Medicaid payment issues and management of grant contracts, issues that had been identified in audits. This proposal will help us strengthen our compliance and process controls by addressing areas of critical staffing needs and by investing to further expand our continuous improvement efforts, expanding our capacity to examine and improve process controls. If our efforts to date have brought us to the sixth inning of a nine-inning ball game, as was declared by the co-chair of our advisory panel in December, Bill George, these investments would enable us to get to the bottom of the ninth once they were fully implemented. Next slide. Supporting a service delivery transformation. This proposal funds a plan to move Minnesota toward a person-centered integrated human services delivery system. The proposal builds on work we started 5 years ago when we partnered with counties and tribes to develop a vision for the future human services delivery system. In 2019, you provided us funding and support, and we said we'd come back with a plan. This is that plan. The focus of the plan is squarely on the consumer, the people and families who are supported by human services in Minnesota. Improving the consumer experience, improving consumer access to services, taking a holistic approach to the individual and family, and allowing consumers more control over their service navigation, including access to their own case data. The foundation of the proposal is a set of recommendations from Gartner Consulting for a roadmap for Minnesota to achieve the vision. The roadmap is fully aligned with the recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology, specifically the modernization playbook that group developed. We have an example of what success looks like in Minnesota, MN Benefits, the tool we launched statewide last fall that provides a new portal that people can use to apply for 9 cash childcare and food programs. MN Benefits reduces application time from over 60 minutes to an average of 12 minutes. It's mobile-enabled, simple to use, has a Spanish version with more languages to come. This proposal funds the roadmap recommended by Gartner, including the business capabilities needed to successfully execute this scope of modernization. I recognize that this is and will be thought of as a big IT proposal. We're also thinking that a year of surplus is a good year to make big IT investments. Next slide. Our direct care and treatment electronic health record. This is a proposal to implement a fully compliant, fully functional electronic health record for direct care and treatment to improve compliance, efficiency, support safe and high quality care, monitor equity outcomes, and enhance the continuum of care. All healthcare facilities were mandated by the Department of Health to have an EHR in place by 2015. DCT has not met this timeline. Colleagues in the Minnesota Hospital Association can't believe DCT doesn't yet have an electronic health record. DCT has been using operational funds to develop an electronic health record over the last couple of years, but needs additional funding to accelerate and complete the development. Lack of a fully functional health record, electronic health record, significantly impacts DCT's efficiency and ability to provide quality care and treatment to patients and clients. Right now, DCT has 300,000 filing inches of paper medical records for over 100,000 patients and clients. A complete understanding of a patient or client's healthcare needs may require a clinician to review both electronic and medical records, particularly burdensome for required annual reviews. When a patient moves between any of the 200 DCT sites, the paper record needs to move with them. We have no ability to track routine health maintenance issues like vaccines in our medical record and rely on spreadsheets and other ad hoc tools. Our current system is duplicative and incomplete at the same time. This proposal would complete the electronic health record in two phases. Phase one would implement an electronic medical record across DCT, replacing paper files and allow tracking of care over time. The EMR must be in place and stable before the electronic health record in phase two, which would allow care of the whole person and better care coordination. A fully functional electronic health record allows sharing of information as well with external healthcare providers as needed. Next slide. And in this slide, I'm gonna, I can tell you that our Assistant Commissioner for Community Supports, Gertrude Matemba-Matasa, is prepared to take us to the next set of slides.
Thank you, Commissioner Harpstead. I'm just gonna pause there and see if there are any questions from members on your piece. I'm not seeing any questions. Welcome to the committee, Assistant Commissioner Matemba-Matasa.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Gertrude Matemba-Matasa, currently serving as Assistant Commissioner for the Community Supports Administration. The governor recommends funding to retain, create, or expand children's inpatient psychiatric and psychiatric residential treatment facility beds. The funding would be issued through a competitive request for proposal process to hospitals or mental health providers to retain, build, or expand existing facilities to add beds for children in need of acute high-level psychiatric care. The governor recommends the complete transition of substance use disorder services to direct access to ensure compliance with federal guidelines. The proposal revises Minnesota statutes related to direct access implementation and repurposes the administrative allocation for counties and tribal nations. It also adjusts Minnesota statutes to mirror the standards offered by the American Society of Addiction Medicine to follow federal and state reforms from previous years. The governor recommends the intensive treatment in foster care, Medicaid, medical assistance service to include services to children at risk of an out-of-home placement. This expanded program will be called Children's Intensive Behavioral Health Services and will also offer resources to families whose children are being returned home from a higher level of care. It is anticipated this new service will expand the number of children and families served from the current 175 to 800 per year. The governor recommends to create an additional first episode psychosis provider site and to create an emerging mood disorder program. First episode psychosis programs serve people age 15 to 40 with early signs of psychosis. The emerging mood disorder program would use evidence-informed interventions for youth and young adults who are at risk of developing a mood disorder or are experiencing an emerging mood disorder. The governor recommends a 50% rate increase for adult day treatment services to better sustain available day service providers and to keep people stable while living in the community. Adult day treatment is an important community service that often serves as a step down, stabilization service for people leaving more acute mental health care settings, such as hospitals or intensive residential treatment. The governor recommends an ongoing extension of mobile crisis grants and transition to community initiative. These mobile crisis grants strengthen the state's mobile crisis infrastructure and help improve access to crisis services by supporting counties and tribes to staff 24-hour mobile crisis lines. The transition to community initiative assists people in exiting Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center, community mental health psychiatric units, and community behavioral health hospitals, as well as people who are on the forensic mental health program. These programs were expanded during the 2021 legislature, and those expansions currently end in fiscal year 2024. This recommendation makes those expansions permanent. The governor recommends an ongoing extension of mobile crisis grants. The governor recommends an ongoing extension of mobile crisis grants and transition to community initiative. These mobile crisis grants strengthen the state's mobile crisis infrastructure and help improve access to crisis services by supporting counties and tribes to staff 24-hour mobile crisis lines. Oh, did I just repeat? Sorry. Computer stuck. Okay, here we go. The governor recommends extending. Oh, my word. Okay. Sorry, I've got a mic. I'm going to. Excuse me one second while I fix my computer. Okay. The governor recommends expanding mobile transition use and strengthening person-centered district planning activities. This recommendation creates mobile transition units focused on adults and children in emergency departments and inpatient hospital settings to transition them to a lower level of care or community services. This recommendation also funds certified individuals to work with adults, children, and their parents, the clinical team and county-based social service providers to develop person-centered transition documents that are incorporated into the clinical discharge plan. The governor recommends funding for startup grants for new psychiatric residential treatment facilities. These facilities provide active treatment at an inpatient level of care under the direction of a physician, 7 days a week to youth under age 21 with complex mental health needs based on medical necessity. This recommendation would create up to 4 new sites. This recommendation also expands the allowable uses of startup grants to include emergency workforce shortage uses as determined by the commissioner. The governor recommends redefining the scope of allowable expenses under the Children's Mental Health Respite Care Grant Program to include forms of respite care services that are family-centered and culturally affirming. The proposal also increases access for children who are already in out-of-home placement but who are at risk of change in placement or a higher level of care due to their mental health conditions. Respite care grants provide temporary relief to families of children with emotional disturbances or severe emotional disturbances. The governor recommends creating a community of practice focused exclusively on children's mental health issues. This network of families, advocates, researchers, providers, and other professionals will be tasked with identifying shared solutions to behavioral health issues facing children. This collaboration will attempt to identify gaps in children's behavioral health services, enhance collective knowledge, and inform changes to improve outcomes. The governor recommends changing eligibility for an enhanced reimbursement for early intensive developmental behavioral intervention, commonly known as EIDBI, to promote culturally responsive care being offered to American Indians. This recommendation removes the requirement for non-English language fluency to receive this enhanced reimbursement for individuals who are members of a tribal nation. The governor also recommends changes to the Opioid Epidemic Response Advisory Council composition and the Opioid Epidemic Response Fund distribution of funds. This includes expanding the membership of ORAC to include a representative from all 11 federally recognized American Indian tribes. Currently, only 2 have membership with ORAC. Additionally, it would require that 40% of the ORAC grants are awarded to projects that have culturally specific or culturally responsive components. The proposal would continue existing funding for traditional healing grants in the base starting in fiscal year 2025, which are currently set to expire. It will also retain additional funds for grants administration and for instituting a reporting structure for counties to ensure the settlement dollars are used properly. This will include measuring outcomes through impact evaluations. The governor recommends baselining funds to assist medical assistance recipients with a documented disability or disabling condition who are also homeless or at risk of homelessness when they must move to a community setting. This proposal would provide up to $3,000 per individual in moving assistance to cover rent or security deposits, utility setup, home and home furnishings. The current appropriation is temporary and is set to expire on March 31st, 2024. The proposal also recommends expanding the housing support for adults with serious mental illness program, commonly known as HSASME. This program provides support services to individuals with substance use disorders or also homeless or in long-term homelessness or at risk for homelessness. Services provided will assist individuals to transition to and sustain permanent support housing. The governor recommends funding to assist with the ongoing maintenance and improvement of the homeless information management system. This database supports programs across multiple agencies to serve individuals experiencing homelessness and allows the state to partner with other stakeholders to track progress and determine the best ways to target resources to meet the needs of the population. The governor also recommends funding for 100 positions for nonprofits currently funded through the AmeriCorps Heading Home Initiative. The initiative is a federal grant program that has provided 100 volunteers across 40 different shelter sites across Minnesota. Volunteers help individuals experiencing homelessness with navigating and accessing resources to find permanent housing. This funding would provide the state match requirement to ensure the positions continue to serve beyond 2022. The governor also recommends funding for additional staffing to assist in the administration of housing assistance programs. The positions would assist with current and new programming with a focus on community outreach and equity. And the last item, the governor recommends funding for the Department of Employment and Economic Development and the Department of Human Services to work with Minnesota Housing and the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness to survey and study the housing and shelter industry. This would include employees who work at shelters, transitional housing settings, street outreach, and site-based housing for long-term homelessness. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Mutamba Mututasa. Are there any questions for the Assistant Commissioner? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I encourage and certainly support the programs that you offered in the presentation. My question is about access to those programs. Individuals with mental health issues or homelessness are often a little bit less find it more difficult, I guess, to access a program like that. How are those individuals identified? How are they maintained in a program, and how do they get services?
Commissioner Mutamba Mutusa.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative, as you know, we work in partnership with community providers, and the community providers really have the responsibility to identify the individuals who need these programs. Our role is to provide funding as well as technical assistance to the providers who work in community directly with the program recipients.
Representative Fisher, you're muted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Madam Commissioner, I've got a question in terms of the mental health grants for mobile crises out there. And this is a little bit of a follow-up on Representative Sandell's question, is what programs are you aware of right now or funding that is doing mental health services out in the field, meeting the homeless where they're at? And where I'm asking this is, I know that some of the local communities in our area have local encampments of those who are experiencing homelessness who do have mental health issues. And the big challenge they have is it's not easy for them to get in to see a set service. And so was wondering what you're aware of that is being done in funding programs that will send people out to where the people are instead of expecting them to be on a telehealth call, et cetera, when they don't have that technology.
Commissioner Mutamba Mutasa.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Fisher. I'll kick us off, and then I want to allow my colleagues to also chime in. As you know, one of the main goals of the One Minnesota Plan is to integrate mental health with housing or homelessness. And the Department of Human Services is working very closely with the Interagency Council on Homelessness, which includes other state agencies, to make this a reality. I also mentioned there are several grant programs that really speak directly to this particular need in our community. And I'm gonna punt this over to some of my colleagues who may have some more specifics, but just know that this is definitely a focus to integrate homelessness and mental health for the reason that you just spelled out. Maybe I'll have Christy Grom chime in and provide a few more specifics.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Grom. Please state your name and if you can help answer Representative Fisher's question. There she is. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Christy Grom with the Department of Human Services. That's a great question, Representative Fisher. We do have some specific programs, in particular the PATH program that Assistant Commissioner Matemba Mutasa mentioned, is really specific to outreach and meeting people kind of where they're at, whether they're living on the streets or maybe in an emergency shelter. And so we work with grantees at the both county level and community organization level who have those outreach teams that are already, you know, built infrastructures into their programs to provide those services and meet people where they're at. We also have our community living infrastructure grants, which are primarily for counties and tribes, and they do as well some of the street outreach that you're referring to and connect with people to address all of their issues, whether it's mental health or substance use disorders or, you know, the many array of issues that folks are dealing with in those circumstances.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to Ms. Grammy for that additional information that is helpful. And what I'll do is I'll take the rest of it offline. Ms. Grammy, I'll have my LA follow up with you. I've got folks in our communities who are looking for a little bit more information on those type of things to help meet the needs. So thank you. And thank you for the presentation.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is either to the commissioner or the assistant commissioner. Certainly a breathtaking presentation in terms of the size, not only in terms of the budgetary numbers, but also in terms of the number of people that you're suggesting that you need to address these issues. A couple of questions first before I ask my final question. Could someone remind me of the number of people that currently work for DHS directly?
Representative Albright, could you just maybe just ask if you have specific questions for the assistant commissioner, and then we can take those questions. We have three more presenters, and maybe we could hold those to the end. Is that okay?
It leads to a question, but I'll follow on with that one afterwards, and just put me down for asking a follow-up question.
I will.
The assistant commissioner mentioned about in the in one slide about impact evaluations. And that was how you were going to evaluate the effectiveness in the EIDBI program. I've never heard that term before, and so I'm hoping that the assistant commissioner can give me a definition in terms of what impact evaluations look like.
Commissioner Matemba Mutasa?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Albright, when we say impact evaluation, we are talking specifically about whether people are making progress. If the goal is to move people from point A to point B, really tracking that progress. So really tracking, did our work make a difference? And specifically, the impact evaluation that I mentioned was related to the opioid funding specifically, and not for the EIDBI program. So if you could check the notes, they should reflect that we are working, we have a task force that's really focused on developing impact evaluation for the opioid funding that's coming into our state. As a point of clarification.
Thank you, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the Assistant Commissioner, this model of impact evaluations, is in terms of your using it for the opioid money that is coming in terms of effectiveness for that program, is it something that you intend to use as a model for verifying effectiveness in other programs? Your organization, to put it bluntly, is enormous. And I'm curious if you're using similar models to determine effectiveness in other programs. I don't see anything in terms of removal of programs or the deletion of programming, but I certainly see 250 new people that you want to hire to do new programming. This is breathtaking, and I don't know that it has merit based upon the information. I certainly hope you're forthcoming with more information in the weeks to come.
Assistant Commissioner, would you like to respond to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, just to touch back on your question about impact, it is always our goal to have impact. And as it relates to the people that are being hired, there is a very thorough process to determine what is needed in the community. And that process is really, it includes stakeholders, people who are providing these services directly to the people in our community. And then we do financial calculations to determine what it will take for DHS to provide those services to the people in our state. And so, yes, impact evaluation is something that we strive for at all times because we want our work to make a difference. And I hope that answers the question.
Representative Albright.
I'll follow up after the remainder of the presentation.
Thank you. So the next presenter is Assistant Commissioner Brown from Children and Family Services. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, committee members. My name is Tiki Brown, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services. I'll be presenting the governor's budget recommendations related to economic assistance, food security, and child welfare. But first, I'll round out the homelessness proposal. The governor's budget proposes to address homelessness for Minnesota adults, youth, and families with three specific investments. Investing in the emergency services program to invest shelter capacity, expanding funding for the Homeless Youth Act, which is increasing the number of homeless units for youth experiencing homelessness, and expanding funding for, or providing additional funding for the transitional housing program, which would increase transitional housing, wraparound services, preventative programming to ensure that families don't stay entrenched in housing instability generation to generation. With that, we'll transition over to economic assistance. The governor's budget includes a series of recommendations aimed at addressing deep poverty by closing service gaps in the state's cash assistance programs and ensuring that people are supported to live in dignity and to have better health outcomes. Specifically, the governor recommends indexing general assistance or GA benefits to the Minnesota Family Investment Program or MFIB, which would raise the maximum GA benefit from $203 per month to $344 per month and tying the value to annual inflation estimates. It would also ensure that allocations are fair and meet local needs and would also allow a reasonable amount of time to complete Social Security disability benefit applications with additional support for individuals. All of these recommendations are based on the 2020 report exploring the impacts of deep poverty on health outcomes. The governor's budget also includes recommendations to change how the state calculates benefits for the Minnesota Family Investment Program and general assistance. If enacted, MFIB and GA benefits would be set using 6-month budget periods rather than month-to-month budget adjustments. This change would provide more stable income to offset income fluctuations that particularly affect those households that are working. And it would align MFIB and GA rules with SNAP and housing support program rules, which provides greater administrative simplicity, reduced paperwork, impacting our low-wage workers in need of assistance, as well as frontline county workers who administer these programs. The governor's budget invests $5.6 million in 23 and 24 to create a temporary two-year expansion of existing community support services to serve an additional 5,000 households that have been unserved or underserved by previous COVID-19 relief efforts, including immigrant populations. Specifically, this proposal includes funding for a multilingual statewide hotline. It includes resources for programs currently administered by the Resettlement Programs Office at the department, and it also includes funding for outreach and research aimed at addressing systemic economic barriers for children living in poverty by improving the take-up rate for Minnesota families for the new federal child tax credits should they be reinstated by Congress. The governor's budget includes a $5 million per year investment to expand the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program, otherwise known as FAME. This increase would be added to the current base funding level for FAME, which is $325,000 per year. FAME gives Minnesotans with low incomes match savings accounts, and this would increase the lifetime financial match limit from $6,000 to $9,000, as well as a few other program adjustments. The governor's budget provides additional funding for community action agencies and tribal nations to create community resource hubs to better serve and connect families to services and supports. The recommendation funds physical locations that will support individuals. It will be geographically dispersed across the state so that when fully implemented, it's anticipated that we would have 100 community resource sites across the state. Next, we'll transition over to food support slides. The governor's budget includes recommendations for tribal nations and American Indian organizations to improve access to food security programs within tribal and American Indian communities. This funding will assist building capacity for tribal governments and organizations to provide culturally relevant food supports, develop culturally relevant training on food access and sustainability, as well as provide additional technical assistance, materials, and supplies. The governor's budget includes $15 million to improve and expand food shelf facilities throughout the state through capital improvements. In many areas across the state, there are still no viable food shelf options, and the pandemic has strained already underfunded food shelf facilities. These factors underscore the need for significant investment in the food shelf infrastructure statewide. If funded, these grants would be used to add freezer and dry storage space, improve the safety and sanitation of existing food shelves, and address the ongoing wear and tear of deferred maintenance to existing food shelves. The governor's budget includes new grants to food shelves, food banks, and meal programs. This fund would include cost to purchase, store, transport, and process the distribution of foods to individuals and families across the state. It would include technology to facilitate no contact or low contact food distribution and outreach models. And a portion of these funds may be used to provide outreach and application assistance to ensure that eligible Minnesotans who are not enrolled in SNAP could also receive SNAP benefits. We'll transition over to child welfare. The governor's budget includes a series of investments in child welfare with the goal of reducing the number of children entering the system and making prevention and family preservation a central focus. These investments will better ensure that children who have entered the child welfare system are more likely to remain safely at home with their parents or, if removal is necessary, placed into care with relatives or kin. These investments include an expansion of a number of existing programs, grant programs. It includes investments to support promising prevention practices, specifically supporting community-based providers in developing and implementing parent-mentor programs across the state. It would invest in more funding to counties and tribal governments For example, to provide grants to support lower caseloads for caseworkers working with youth in the extended foster care system, as well as provide grants, payments to youth exiting foster care. The governor's budget adds additional staff to the Indian Child Welfare Act unit, expanding and strengthening existing work that is used to develop prevention services intended specifically for Indian children and their families. Specifically, this work would include addressing non-compliance complaints and work through backlog cases that the department holds, as well as developing tribal-specific policies and practices to respond to sex and labor trafficking of Indian children. The governor's budget includes funding for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Family Services to support the tribal government's planning to join the Minnesota American Indian Child Welfare Initiative. Once fully implemented in fiscal year 2025, the tribal government will begin receiving child welfare cases from counties to offer culturally based services. These funds will provide resources for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe to hire and train staff to manage the growth in administrative and direct care programs as the tribe plans to prepare to join the initiative. And that will also fund temporary staff at the department to coordinate some of the necessary IT updates. And finally, the governor's budget includes investments to support the third phase of implementation of the federal Family First Prevention Services Act. This will pay for qualified individuals to retain their child and adolescent needs and strengths, or CANS, tool certification, state staff to implement the new or expanded prevention services, ongoing child welfare training academy training related to the act, and finally, funding to operationalize the IT requirements of the Act. And that concludes the Children and Family Services section. Madam Chair, you're on mute.
I'm sorry. Question from Representative Sandell. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner. When I spoke to the Director of Community Services in Washington County this summer about the issues of poverty and the difficulty of individuals getting out of poverty and staying out of poverty, she talked about the problem of the benefits gap. She said individuals who are working and receiving benefits often get to a certain situation where an extra few dollars on in their wages eliminates their opportunities to continue with some of the benefits. And that often results in an individual or a family falling back into poverty again. And she wondered if there was a possibility for legislation that would either eliminate or reduce the impact of that benefits gap. I listened to the presentation, but I'm not sure that, I'm not sure you talked specifically about that. Would you tell me a little bit about that benefits gap and how your programs are dealing with that issue?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. It's a good question. It's a longstanding issue, the benefit gap and the struggles that our families in poverty as they are determining which benefits to utilize, how long to utilize, and trying to manage their individual wages. And so certainly our proposal to expand the budget periods will help stabilize folks, when we are on a monthly reoccurring cycle that causes additional strain and stress on families, and that certainly impacts the benefit gap. There are a number of federal policies that make it difficult to impact, the benefit gap across the board. And we're certainly happy to talk to you maybe a little bit more offline about some of those federal policies.
Thank you, Commissioner Brown. Representative Sandell, I'm not seeing any more questions, so we're going to go to the next presenter. We have the Inspector General with us. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kulani Moti, and I serve as the Inspector General here at DHS. And I will be presenting on two proposals today in regards to our licensing and background studies efforts. So the first proposal is for critical resources needed for our licensing area. The governor recommends providing funding today to address the growth in the number of foster care and home and community-based licenses and applications and address the growth in the work related to our maltreatment investigations. From 2014 to 2021, there has been a 139% increase in the overall licenses that we administer. And since the inception of the HCBS, or Home and Community-Based License Services, in January 2014, the number of service lines that may be licensed under our 245D licensure has increased from 19 to 31. We've also seen an increase in the number of foster care applications being submitted, and our overall increase in the number of licenses has caused the number of complaints that we receive in our maltreatment and investigations and intake area have doubled over the last 6 years. So without additional resources, this increase in workload has caused licensing application processing times to significantly increase, has greatly lengthened the time between home and community-based licensing reviews, and has negatively impacted the timeliness of our maltreatment assessments and investigations. So this request provides for additional staff and, if funded, will give us the ability to reduce the amount of time it takes to process our HCBS and foster care licensing applications, reduce the time between our HCBS licensing reviews to at least once every 3 years, and to ensure that we are meeting our statutory timeliness for maltreatment complaints. Next slide, please. This proposal is for one-time funding to credit providers for the cost of emergency background studies that have been conducted since July 2021. This funding request is similar to the request that was included in the budget last year, which gave a credit to providers for the cost of emergency studies that were conducted between April of 2020 and June of 2021. And again, this is a reminder to the committee, during the peacetime emergency, the department waived or modified several of the state background study requirements, which we have termed as emergency background studies, and there was a fee associated with this. So as we return and transition back to compliant background studies, this is a request to provide a one-time funding credit back to the providers for the costs that they had incurred while submitting emergency background studies. And that is the end of my two proposals.
Thank you, Inspector General Moti. Are there any questions on this section? I'm not seeing any, but we'll have time for questions. We have our last presenter with us. We have the Budget Director, Bailey. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Hello, members of the committee and Chair Schultz. My name is Elise Bailey. I'm the Budget Director for the department. And I am left with the two remaining proposals that didn't fit neatly into each of the buckets of presentation. And as you can see on the screen, it's two proposals. One is the DHS component of the legalizing adult use cannabis. So we have a few aspects that impact our agency in this proposal. One is expungements that occur under the bill. We need administrative costs to incorporate those expungements over the time period in the bill. And then the other component is there is a council for substance use disorder council that we will be administering and giving out grant dollars according to the council decisions on that. And so those are the two components of that proposal. And then lastly, we have a TANF maximization proposal, which is a financing of about $22 million a year from TANF, freeing up general fund spending to use elsewhere in the bill. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Budget Director Bailey. Any questions on those two items? Not, oh, there we go. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the Budget Director. Your last slide suggests legalizing cannabis for adults, but yet your proposal, it appears to me like you're getting the cart before the horse. We haven't even taken up the idea, proposition of legalizing cannabis yet. You're running forward and saying, well, it's going to pass, so we need these kind of these people and this amount of money. Could you please explain why you're taking that position?
Ms. Bailey?
Sure. I would say this component of the proposal is just the DHS component of the budget proposal. The remaining components are kind of located elsewhere in the state budget. So the proposal as a whole would be a complete bill that would legalize adult use cannabis. And as part of that, we would have a council where DHS staff would need to staff it. And we would also, as part of the bill, folks that had criminal records that were nonviolent crimes that were just linked to cannabis use, those would be expunged under the bill. And so our background studies folks would need to do a lot of work related to the expungement of those records. And so those are just the two components that impact DHS, but the rest of the components are located elsewhere in the budget.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. And this is, remember, the governor's proposal, and the governor has proposed to legalize cannabis. I think Chair Liebling may want to respond to that question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I had a different question, and Representative Albright gave me a little time to get my headset plugged in. That's all.
Let me go see if Representative Albright, did you have a follow-up to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the budget director, I guess my question didn't quite get answered, but wouldn't you first recognize that the legalization needs to take place, and your job is to respond to that as opposed to almost default to a position that it's going to pass and anticipate that you need these services? It seems like it's not even semantic, it's coordinated. So I'm just trying to understand why you would be placing, I understand about the governor's position on legalization, and if that's, you know, in a coordination with him, I understand, it just would see to me like you would need that to pass before you would respond with what you would need in order to put that into effect. But the state would have to have that legalized before you would move forward with that proposal.
Did you want to respond, Ms. Bailey?
Representative Albright, Chair Schultz, the bill does legalize adult use cannabis, and then the timing of the bill, you know, later we would be expunging the records. So as part of the bill, it requires the expungement of the records in addition to legalizing marijuana, and so we would need the resources to do that accordingly. The bill also clearly develops a council to use with to develop holistic recommendations related to substance use across the state. And so we're just incorporating the administrative costs that would be required to staff that council. So it's kind of the whole bill utilizes a holistic picture of once marijuana is legalized, these are the things that need to occur in order to kind of comply or go along with it.
It looks like Representative Pinto might want to respond to that question as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I was just going to note that, I mean, we ask the administration to make proposals to us. We then decide as a legislature, and I guess we want presumably to get complete proposals. So if the administration simply proposed that adult use cannabis be legalized but didn't have the infrastructure around it, then they could rightly be criticized for giving us an incomplete proposal. So I guess I view this as being the administration is saying we think that X should happen, and if you agree, this is everything that goes along with it, and then, of course, we as the legislature decide what to do. So I guess it does not trouble me that we're seeing the DHS portion of a proposal that is then being heard in multiple committees, and the governor's making his proposal, and we'll make our decision what to do with it. But we do want a complete proposal, so I appreciate DHS providing that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Chair Liebling.
Yeah, and to that, I would just add that before I ask my other question, I would just add that this is the way we do it with everything. I mean, there are other proposals in this package where the administration is coming to us and saying we want to do X thing and here's what it would cost. And it's up to us to evaluate that program and whether we think the funding requested is appropriate and we want to authorize that. So this just happens to be a more hot button issue, but it's really not being handled any different than any other issue and the way we do this all the time. But my question though for Ms. Bailey is about the TANF refinancing that was on that, I think was on the same slide. And I would just like to, you know, I and I think some other members are pretty protective of that TANF fund. And in the past, we have worked hard to make sure that the money that's in it is not only, you know, that it doesn't go out of the fund for other purposes. And we've worked hard to keep money in that fund for the families that that fund is really supposed to benefit. So I'm just really curious about why there's a refinancing out of that fund going on in the budget and would like more information on it. Thank you.
Ms. Bailey?
Chair Schultz, Representative Liebling. I think that's a great question, and I misspoke earlier. It's about $26 million a year. It's being refinanced to pay for the working family tax credit that's already under current law, and the reasoning is because we're building up a balance in the TANF fund. As you remember, the TANF is really a block grant that we get from the federal government, and over time, sometimes there's a balance that's built up. And so the idea behind this portion of the proposal is to refinance it to free up more general fund spending so that spending can be spent in other areas of the Health and Human Services budget. So, but I understand your concern, and, you know, it is a concern across many stakeholders.
Chair Liebling?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And this is something that, you know, I think we'll have to have a lot more discussion about. So thank you.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all of the presenters. You know, I have a lot of questions on different things, but my overall question is I personally don't have a sense of what's left from the federal funds we got for COVID, how that's been used, how that plays into the current budget request. So I'm just wondering if Ms. Bailey or someone else could talk about what's still available from the federal money, how you're planning to use it, and make that information available to the committee so we can sort of see what the options are out there.
Ms. Bailey, do you have that information handy?
Chair Schultz, Representative, I have a follow-up question wondering if you mean the COVID ARPA federal funds or is it all federal funds?
I think that she referred, I think she means the ARPA funds, right, Representative Robbins?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Robbins. We can get you that information. It's my understanding that the governor's pot of the ARPA funds are, you know, I'm not sure if there's any left. It's been spent up to a pretty slim margin, so we can get you that information. And then the amount that had been set aside for the legislature and the governor to decide on, that's still been set aside. But we can get you the information on what's left and how it's been spent.
Is it around $1 billion that's in the ARPA pool, Ms. Bailey? Or maybe Mr. Berg is on. Maybe he can clarify. Mr. Berg?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's exactly right. It's $1.15 billion was left unallocated last year. There was the pool you referred to, which is $500 million of the governor's, which is essentially committed, although not spent. It is committed, as Ms. Bailey said, pretty much down to the there might be a couple million left that aren't allocated, but it's very close. The $1.15 billion is in the general fund and is part of the governor's budget.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Ms. Representative Robbins?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Berg and Ms. Bailey. Yes, I would like to see sort of where the governor's $500 million went and then how much of what you're proposing in this current budget is tied to what was set aside last year, if any of it, or somehow I just want to understand that better.
Yeah, Mr. Berg, we'll get those budget pages soon, right? Correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're planning to do regular budget change pages, although it we, Ms. Bailey and I, have been talking about a tracking sheet that'll be able to follow things like the TANF thing better. But as far as the governor's federal money, there is, and I'll look for it there, the MMB website has a specific tracking of everything that's happened out of that, and we get regular reports on that. That happens more at like the ways and means level, but I know the chief fiscal analyst has got, and it's available out there. The governor's, the $1.15 billion, there is, to my knowledge, none of it is specifically committed in the HHS area. I believe that's all been talked about in terms of the unemployment insurance and frontline worker pay, but I don't know as much about where they are using it. I know it isn't specifically committed within the HHS budget at all.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. And Representative Robbins, we can have our staff send you the links to the MMB and the budget change pages too. So, and maybe we can talk about that summary at some time in committee as well. Let's go back to Representative Albright's question of the Commissioner Harpstead, and his question was about the request for the FTEs in this governor's proposal. Commissioner Harpstead?
Yes, Chair Schultz and Representative Albright, we have about 7,500 employees in DHS. About 2,500 of those are in our central office, not in our direct care and treatment services. And appreciate that it sounds like an addition of a lot of employees, and it's taking a lot of employees to implement all the things that were passed in the bill, the HHS bill last year, and potentially in the budget with the surplus this year. And so I think the team has done a good analysis and has a good handle on how many people it would take to implement all the things they're being asked to do these days.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I know there's just greater needs, particularly for in behavioral health and for children's behavioral health, and to address all the things that were exacerbated by the pandemic. So we passed a lot of bills last year, and I know DHS is trying to respond and staff up to meet those needs and to accomplish and implement things that we passed last year. And I also know that Commissioner Harpstead is also, she had us read the book Subtract, which I think is the subtitle is The Science of Doing Less or something like that. So I know Representative Albright, the commissioner, is looking at programs that may no longer be needed and how can they do more with less. But Representative Albright, did you have any more follow-up questions for the commissioner?
Madam Chair, I know that I have a meeting with the commissioner tomorrow, so I'll look forward to a robust discussion at that point.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Any more questions for members? Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick question for the commissioner. Regarding the $115 million investment into the Caring Professions Workforce Program, I'm just curious on if there are requirements for it, like what's the process for people to get that, and if there's any oversight to ensure that that money is going directly to the workers?
Great question, Commissioner.
Yeah, Chair Schultz and Representative Frederick. We recently made some $50 million available to disability providers using our own emergency 12A10 statutory authority. And we required providers to attest that the money was going directly to workers before receiving any of those funds. So we would use a similar process, I assume, with the money that it would be in this bill.
Representative Frederick?
Is there any, thank you, Madam Chair, is there any follow-up after the factoring the oversight to ensure that it's being used as intended?
Commissioner Harpstead.
Excuse me, Chair Schultz and Representative Frederick. I'm going to ask Elise Bailey to describe a little bit more about how we would follow up to assure that.
Ms. Bailey?
Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Frederick. I think that's a great question, and we certainly will design a program that does that. The vision behind it is to have a third-party administrator administer those dollars and to ensure that it does go appropriately to the workers. The way we've envisioned it so far are just broad level ideas on it has to go to workers who are making $30 an hour or lower. So we're really trying to scope into workers on the front lines and who are paid at a level that's concerning for the level of importance and work that they do for the state. And also they have to work in the professions and for a provider that serves medical assistance recipients. And so we're trying to scope it in, making sure that it's flexible for the providers so that, you know, what works for one provider to incentivize workers might not work for another. So whether it's bonuses or paying for schooling or helping with transportation costs for their workers. So making it flexible enough, but also like you've mentioned, making sure that it actually does trickle down to the workers and benefits them.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Representative Frederick?
I'm good, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, any other questions from members? Okay, I'm not seeing any. Well, thank you, DHS, Team DHS, for giving us this presentation of the governor's budget. We really appreciate it, and we know how busy you all are. Hopefully, you'll soon find some more time as the pandemic wanes. So members, our next committee meeting is going to be Tuesday, February 15th, and we're going to go over an update from DHS on all the wonderful bills we passed last year on home and community-based services and waivers. And then we'll probably hear some at least two bills in committee next week, and you'll see the agenda shortly on that information. So with that, members, we stand adjourned. Have a great day.